So, you are very welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Meet Podcast. My name is Danny O'Hanlon.
My name is Niall McCann.
And Niall, we've kind of jumped straight into it this week. Usually you and I would talk a little bit before I hit record, but we've kind of jumped in. So, I'm going to ask how you are, because I haven't done that yet.
I'm grand. I'm super grand. Check it out. I poured myself wine.
Oh, nice.
See that? That's wine you're seeing there.
Red wine, too.
Red wine. Like a Merlot, Dan.
You're drinking a Merlot. I fucking hate Merlot.
On Saturday, I was just going to sit down at my dinner. And I thought, you know what? I'd love a drink with my dinner. Just fucking Saturday night. And I went up to the offy and I was looking at all the cans and I was just like, I don't want any of this shit.
Especially cans. A can of beer with your dinner is thoroughly unpleasant.
You feel like Jim Royal or Onslow from Keeping Up Appearances.
And he was in that show as well. Was he Twiggy in the Royal
Family?
He was Family?
Twiggy. Yeah, he was Twiggy. Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I got a thing. The only thing is, you can set your fucking watch by me with a glass of wine. I had one glass with my dinner. I poured myself another glass and remember nothing after that. I just woke up with the second glass completely untouched at about 5:30 the following morning.
You're not going to nod off in the middle of the podcast, are you?
No, keep talking to me, though. That's going to be very important. Did you see this new thing Guinness have? This Guinnessifier or whatever it is?
No.
It's a thing for getting you the perfect head, I believe.
Well, it's a pretty big promise from Guinness, isn't it?
Yeah. But you pour it into your glass from the can and then you put the glass sitting on top of the Guinnessifying machine. What a fucking racket.
They have to decide what it is they're trying to do, because is Guinness all tradition and whatever, or is it like, no, you just need this yolk you plug in and the pint at home is perfect? Like, which is it? Like, you have to decide. You have to make up your mind which it is. Like,
do you not find Guinness sort of sweetish?
When I was a kid, I always assumed it would taste sweet. When I was a kid and I would see it, I would think, that has to taste like fucking ice cream. Look at that thing. Like, you know.
It's fucking chocolate.
Yeah, fucking chocolate and ice cream on the top of it, man. That's the way I talked when I was a kid. That'll be fucking lovely, that's all.
Put a glass of chocolate and put it, top it up on ice cream.
Do you remember the Simpsons? Do you remember when Lisa broke into the Guinness factory? They were at the Guinness tour and she walked through the wrong door. There was two pipes going into the big Guinness vat and one was labeled bog water and one was labeled chocolate syrup.
Glenn Hansard is in that very briefly. He's singing to someone. He's singing a song to someone up in a window and they throw a piano on top of him.
Oh yeah. Is that actually Glenn?
It is actually him, yeah.
That's what you take from that episode? That like 2 second joke.
Yeah, I suppose that is weird. But I mean, I heard him being interviewed, and then when I watched it, that's what I was looking out for, I think. But I often wonder, like, people, like, if you were Glenn Hansard, right, and you're in the Frames in Ireland and you're sort of big in Ireland, and like, can you imagine him thinking, like, watching The Simpsons, thinking, God, it must be great to get to go and do a voice on The Simpsons, and then years later he actually gets the chance to go and do it. But it's not really the same show. It's like a shit version of it. Like, you know, like a really pale. It's like, I don't know. I can't even think of what a parallel with it would be. Like, it would be like being on Saturday Night Live now or something. But Saturday Night Live is always shit. It just depends on when you're 15, which one you like, you know?
I was super hard on Saturday Night. I still am to a very large extent super hard on Saturday Night Live. But I actually think some of those ones with that Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig and Jason Sudeikis were on. I kind of like a fair lump of that.
The thing with those people on Saturday Night Live is that you notice that when they leave, they're not quite as funny as they were when they were there. And that's not to say that all the stuff they do on Saturday Night Live was great, but when they go and do a film or something like that, they're in such good comedic shape that they're just brilliant in everything. And then when they leave to just do films, I feel like they're never quite as funny as they were when they were in shape, quote unquote, you know.
Did those guys, like, I mean, I'm trying to think of the big stars from there, and it'd be, I'm thinking like Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader. They'd never had their sort of series of John Lovitz films, like, did they? There was no.
Yeah,
I mean, went and did sort of deliberately odd stuff that I kind of like, really.
Sometimes, but you know, I kind of miss having those kind of some of those kind of reliable series of films. Like, I'm trying to think of one, like
Joe Dart. That was David Spade's attempt.
It was David Spade. I don't like David Spade, to be honest.
Nobody likes David Spade. Like Norm Macdonald.
David Spade would be telling stories about Norm MacDonald, how they're great mates, and all the stories would be like, are you sure he doesn't just hate you? He sounds really mean to you all the time.
Do you ever see the episode of Comedians in Cars that he's on? And he's like,
yes!
They're eating like chili or something like that. And he goes, Mike, that's hotter than a $2 pistol or something like that. And Jerry goes, yeah. How old are you?
Or when he goes, he's talking to Jerry and he goes, yeah, you don't got any kids, do you? And Jerry goes, three, I have two boys and a girl. And he sort of looks at him puzzledly and goes, I guess we'll just agree to disagree. That's such a weird thing to say.
But sometimes I watch those, like when you see interviews at Norm MacDonald now, and this might be an awful thing to say, but does he have some kind of like degenerative thing where he's... Like, I don't know, like, he's still very funny, but sometimes I just wonder, is he, like...
Is it how much of this is an act?
Yeah, yeah. Is it, like, onset Parkinson's or something? Like, you know, it's... That could be, like, that could be a travesty of a thing to say, but...
I 100% understand what you're saying. But he has this sort of hard-living man persona, doesn't he?
Yeah, which is weird, because his material isn't really like that, though.
He doesn't tell those stories. Like, I remember somebody on Joe Rogan telling a story about him, how he was out in Atlantic City and he got in a real streak in the casino and he came out with something like $50,000 or something. And he walked down to the pier at the edge of the pier in Atlantic City and he tucked the money. He had it in readies, like he had it in the money and he fucked it off the end of the pier. And I think it was Artie Lang. He says, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing with it? And he goes, I'm just going to lose it by tomorrow anyway. Might as well. He's a hard-living man.
Like. He comes from that scene, yeah, where they were like that sort of late 80s, early 90s scene in U.S. stand-up where everyone, it was just all whiskey and cocaine and sexual assault and things like that, you know. Have you ever seen what roast was it he was at where he went up and he just read really old jokes from a joke book?
Gilbert Godfrey, one of my best friends. I love Gilbert. When you go to the men's room later, you'll see a sign that says, gentlemen, pay no heed, go right in. There's no room that says scoundrel on it. But now we come to Bob Saget. That's why we're all here. Bob? Bob, you have a lot of well-wishers here tonight, and a lot of them would like to throw you down one, a well. They want to murder you in a well. Seems a little harsh, but apparently they want to murder you in a well, it says here on this card.
Do you know who else I believe, Dan, although I have seen none of his stuff, is a tremendous... stand-up comedian, Michael Keaton, apropos of nothing.
Because you try and be cool. You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be cool like the guys on television. I wanted to be cool like John Garfield and Jimmy Cagney and those guys. They were really cool guys. They always had it under control, you know? Jimmy Cagney lost it a little bit in White Heat, but outside of that, he was generally a pretty cool guy, you know? My mother? Anyway, I always wanted to be like those guys because they had such a nice acting style, you know? John Garfield always goes, sure, sure. Sure, Jenny, I know all about it. You can always tell when they lied, though. It was a dead giveaway when they lied, because they always lied the same way. They'd say, come on, Jenny, play ball with us. Cut a couple years off your sentence in Sing Sing. And I'd say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know nothing about no murder. Come on, Jenny, who said anything about murder? Oh, well, I read about it in the paper. Yeah, sure, that's it. I read about it in the paper. It was in the paper, and I read about it there. That's all. It was in the paper, and I just read about it there. I was very influenced as a kid.
Here's the thing about Michael Keaton. Now, the reason I bring up Michael Keaton, of course, is because this week we are talking about Pacific Heights, the early 90s thriller, the 1990 thriller, in fact, Pacific Heights.
Is that the year or 2 years after Batman?
That's the year after
Batman. Year after Batman.
And the thing about it is, he was like a huge star, Michael Keaton.
Batman was massive. I think it's still my favorite Batman film, the first one.
Really?
Yeah, I really like it.
I have an awful soft spot for the Nolans, I have to say. The Nolan ones.
The only one of those I could watch again would be the second one. I couldn't sit through Batman Begins or Batman Swings Out of a Hole, whatever that one's called. Like, I couldn't watch... I couldn't watch either of those again. Like
Batman goes to Monte Carlo.
That third one where he's hardly Batman at all in the whole thing. Like,
okay,
you know.
Okay. That third one rescues the second one, because the second one I had severe problems with, and nobody in the world was willing to listen to me give out about all the problems I had with the second one. It's such a fucking neocon sort of George Bushy sort of a film where Batman like exceeds his authority, things go desperately wrong, and the only way to fix everything is to lie about it. And like it's shown as it's depicted like a heroic thing to do. And I remember at the time thinking, fuck off.
That character is not built to carry those stories. I'm sorry. He just isn't, like, you know.
I thought he carried them very well. But only because in the third one that everybody else hates, they actually come along and say it bites him in the ass. It's like, oh yeah, shit, maybe we shouldn't have lied to the world in order to get away with shit we shouldn't have been doing in the first place.
But is that what Batman's for? I mean, is he not supposed to be just driving around in a fucking cool car with a, like...
Batman is for moral instruction of children, I'll grant you. Actually, that's overstated. Bob Kane didn't give a fuck about any of that. He was a real sleazebag.
He didn't even really create Batman, did he? That he said, like, draw a thing called Batman, you Bill Finger. Isn't that your man's name?
Yeah. Yeah. Bill didn't draw it. He came in with, like, a guy in red and yellow and green, and Bill Finger went, I'll work on it, Bob, for you.
But didn't he came up with the backstory, came up with the Joker, came up with Robin, yeah, came up with all sorts of shit. Like,
Jerry Robinson came up with the Joker. He came up with everything that is Batman except for the name. Literally, that's literally what he did.
It must have been great at that time to just, like, you could put the word man after, like, before anyone had really been there and done it, you could just put the word man after something, like, car man, there you go, that's the next one, car man, fucking helicopter man, you know, just get cracking with these.
Do you know Jim Steranko at all? He is just one of the most interesting guys of all time. He was like an escape artist and a graphic designer and a comics writer, but he wrote some cool stuff for Marvel in the 60s. He did a lot of the Nick Fury books that were brilliant. But there's this whole big thing of him on the internet, just at some convention, at some panel at a convention, talking about Bob Kane. And he's too old to give a fuck anymore. By the time they recorded it, like, Jim Steranko might be dead, actually. I'm not sure. I should check that out. But he was just too old to give a fuck, and he was just bitching about Bob Kane and about how they had this sort of face-off. When they were in, like, their 60s, when they were pushing 70s, they nearly came to a fist fight at a Comic-Con one
time. That's brilliant.
But he's brilliant. I love Jim Steranko so much. Bob Kane was a sleazebag. Bill Finger died in fucking penury. Not a penny. Not a penny.
I think one of the things that made those comics and everything what they were is that the and it was men, unfortunately, it was all men. The men doing them were, they had these lives. Like, they weren't just, like,
yes,
art students. Like, you know, they went and lived and had lives and had things to write about and whatnot. And they weren't just studying drawing or studying writing or whatever, like, you know.
Yes, absolutely. This is true.
How do we get on to comics? Michael Keaton. So,
Michael Keaton, yes.
Organically in conversation last week, Niall, we hit on to Pacific Heights, which is a 1990 sort of, it's not really a thriller. Is it a thriller? What's a thriller?
I think it's a thriller. Well, it's intended to be a thriller. I mean, there's one serious problem with that definition that I can think of offhand, but yeah, it's intended to be, yeah.
But it's so we sort of organically got talking about it, and we realized neither of us had seen it since we were quite young, and we decided we'd watch it again for this podcast. So Matthew Modine and what's her name, Melanie Griffith, but they are a young couple who buy a house in San Francisco, and to pay the mortgage, they lease out the other two sort of apartments that are built into the house. One is to, like, a sort of a middle-aged Asian couple. And another one, at the start, they're going to be giving it to this guy who is just divorced from his wife, a black police officer. They don't know he's a police officer at the time.
But, no, we don't. Spoilers.
He drops off his form and it goes missing. And Michael Keaton...
I, for one, was very relieved to know that it wasn't race. It wasn't a race issue. Let's be clear on that the start. It wasn't a race issue. It was so cringy.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe
surely
it.
Surely we have to make it clear that they're not objecting to him on the grounds of race. Let's have an extended sequence where his thing gets floated away down the fucking street like it's in Forrest Gump or something.
for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's the guy is supposed to drop off his form with his references or whatever on it the next day. And in the film, his form goes missing. But then the husband later on says, like, look, it's not a racial thing, but we can't trust this guy. And it's like, why not? Like, that seems to be... You've never even met him, like, you know.
Also, he says that immediately after saying he's probably one of those minority scam artists. And it's like, what? It's not a racial thing. You literally just said it was a racial thing.
What about Mr. Baker?
What about him?
He was here first.
Well, where's his application? Maybe he's one of those minority scam artists.
What are you talking about?
You know, they try to get you worried about discrimination so you don't check their credit.
That's not what happened.
Some of these people can be pretty shrewd, Patty.
How would you know?
It's not a racial thing. It's just common sense.
That character, the husband, is all over the place. Like, you're supposed to love him, hate him. I don't know what was going on with him. What kind of guy was he? Like,
right, listen. It's very of its time.
Yeah.
It's a 1990 film, but it's pure sort of Wall Street, Ghostbusters, well, Reaganomics kind of thing.
The first couple of years of any decade, or really the last couple of years of the previous one, like, you know, it was a real 80s film. It was probably made in the 80s and came out in the 90s, like, you know, if it was 1990.
Probably.
But Michael Keaton... But like he's sort of like a really sort of sophisticated squatter.
They're renting the apartment. They rent it to the, you know, they brought great stylist to those old Japanese stereotypes. But they also then need to have another place to rent. And in comes Michael Keaton and he says, listen, I can't give you any references, but I'll pay you 6 months up front. And so your man says, fucking dead on. Except he doesn't. He gives him two references that eventually they used to crack the whole fucking case. Why did he do that? Why did he give them real names? So anyway, Michael Keaton locks himself in their downstairs apartment, pulls every fitting out of the wall and presumably sells it on eBay or whatever they had for eBay back then, the Pony Express or whatever.
Is that what he was selling them, was he?
Well, what else would he do?
Yeah, I suppose I didn't really think about it. I just thought, oh, this is the kind of fucked up nonsense that a squatter gets up to, like, you know, or whatever.
But you're right? Because I think... you're supposed to think that he's some sort of serial property scam artist. And then at the end, it turns out, oh no, he's more some kind of weird pathological psycho that just gets a kick out of it. Or I don't know what the fuck was going on. By the end, I was like, well, what is the story here?
Yeah, I couldn't really figure out what the hell he was actually doing. Like, there's a scene at the start that sort of tries to explain it a little bit. And I was still like, I don't know why he really wants to be in that house. And what were they doing? Like, they were pulling up floorboards and stuff. I guess what they were doing is they were trying to get rid of the other tenants so that they could kind of take over the building. Or,
well, see, that's what I thought it was. I thought they go in, they drive, he picks people who are kind of slightly overextended and just pushes them into the red and then takes advantage when they are desperate to sell. But that doesn't seem to be what he does. What he does is go in and, like, steals people's identity for some reason.
Yeah, by the end of the film, he's got... spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it. You're going to have to... Spoilers, Frank.
Although, that guy does not look innocent. Like, you're not at the start thinking, oh, wow, this Michael Keaton guy. If you can't trust Batman, who can you trust?
But it's like that. It's like the Shining problem. As soon as you see Jack Nicholson, you're like, that lad's trouble. It's the same with Michael Keaton in this. Yeah. You're like, he's the most intense man on the planet. Like, you know, and the way he drives into their little garage at the start is really threatening. Like, you know, nothing about him makes you think, oh, I'd love to have this fella living downstairs. Like, he'll keep the place lovely, so he will.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. He's very much like, you remember the swinging 60s guy that Harry Enfield used to play? Come on, big game. That guy. He's basically American, that guy.
I kind of want to watch some of that Harry Enfield stuff again, because I feel like he wasn't really as cool as some of the other stuff that came along in the 90s with sort of slightly younger comedians in it. Like, you know, he was never quite as cool as like The Fast Show or any of this kind of stuff. But I feel like it's probably still really good. I'd like to watch some of that Harry Enfield stuff again.
I have very fond memories of a lot of it.
Yeah, like Tim Nice But Dim. He was pretty funny.
Come out slowly with your hands up. Oh, Jesus, hit me out with that.
Hello. quiet.
Yes, it is quiet, isn't it? It's lovely and quiet. I'm thinking of buying somewhere around here.
Don't move.
Do you think not? No, you're probably right. Housing.
Stay exactly where you are.
Yeah, that's just what he said. All right, you persuaded me. Where I am at the moment is much closer to work, anyway. I work at home.
Bloody nice bloke. Yeah, it was great. And the old gets. Remember the old gets? The
old gets,
they're funny. Get out of here.
Did he do the double take, brothers? Because they're in a queue or something, and they'll go, oh, we're going to be in this queue all day. And they turn around, and they're at the front of the queue, and they go, oh, and that's just our whole thing. The double take. That's so stupid.
There was a lot of... well, maybe it's one of those things you shouldn't revisit, but yeah, I have an awful fond memories of Harry Hinch.
Well, definitely, like, you know, this Pacific Heights turned out to be something that you shouldn't revisit, because I've got memories of, like, there's certain films I have in my head that we got Sky TV when I was, like, in primary school, and we had it for a couple of years, and they used to show, they would do a thing called the US Top 10. And what they would do is they would show, it was like the charts, like the music charts, but they would show the trailer for all the top 10 films in the US.
Oh, yeah.
And they would go through it, number 10 to number one, like, you know. And I remember some trailers really stick out to me. Like, I remember seeing the trailer for Bram Stoker's Dracula and just thinking, that looks like the scariest thing. I don't think I'd even make it look so scary. I was about 8 or whatever it was. Like, you know, I don't think I'd be able to watch that. That looks so scary. And like, and then Pacific Heights was another one, and I remember thinking that looks scary as well. Like, you know, and it just, it's one of those, as a as an image, it makes a real impression and it stays with you. But it's just such a shame that the film doesn't really live up to it, you know.
Because I knew we were talking about it today, I had a list. I had four things that I thought were actually not bad about it. No, three things. Let's say three things. First of all, the house looks cool. It's like a Hocus Pocus house.
God, that's the first thing you thought about. You had to go digging for the rest.
The second one, Beverly D'Angelo, I really liked.
Yeah.
That scene between her and Melanie Griffith, I really, really liked.
He's far and away the most intelligent man I've ever met. It's not your type. Oh, it's okay to want him. It's a free country. I could tell, you know, when I saw you up in Frisco, I could tell you had a thing for him.
Are you his type?
What do you think?
Yeah, what else is she in? I couldn't...
She just looks familiar from loads of stuff, like, you know, but I'm not sure what else she's in. She's in The Simpsons, isn't she? Isn't she...
She's Lurline.
Yeah. I thought she was the one who did... She's Lurline. I thought she was the one who did the Lisa Lionheart doll, but that was Kathleen Turner, wasn't it?
That was Kathleen Turner. Not now, I'm too drunk.
But she would have been better in the Melanie Griffith role.
Well, Melanie Griffith was my third one. I didn't mind Melanie Griffith. When it went to her and she was doing her detective stuff and she was sort of sneaking in and out of hotel rooms and ordering all that shit, I was like, okay, finally, it's starting to take off a wee bit. But there kind of wasn't enough.
Yeah.
She never really got to do anything, like, you know?
Yeah, and like the character of her husband was so weird. Like, do you know the one that he has to... You know when he gets stabbed in the house or whatever, and then he has to, Michael Keaton's character issues a restraining order that says he's not like coming in so distance of the house. So he goes and stays with a mate of his, and they show a clip of them in the mate's house, and they seem to be having a great time. He's not at all worried about his wife. And they're making dinner. They're standing making a stir fry or something, and they're laughing and drinking beer.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second, should you not be fucking seething? But it was all like that. He just would go from fucking...
When she...
180 degree turns left and right.
In one scene, she has a miscarriage because they're so stressed out with having this maniac living downstairs, and they go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And this isn't verbatim, but he says something along the lines when they're leaving the hospital. It's like, it'll be okay. The doctor says we can try again in a few months. And you're just like, what? Jesus Christ, man.
Pull yourself together. Be game. Yeah.
I noticed that Michael Keaton wasn't on your list.
Michael Keaton was good, but Michael Keaton was just being Michael Keaton. That probably hurt Modine a wee bit, because anytime they were on the screen together, you were like, oh, just fucking kill him, Michael, and get it over with. Like, it'll do everybody a favor in the long run. Like,
I don't know whether it was a badly written character or whether Matthew Modine is just maybe not a great actor.
It was really disappointing. I really wanted it to be good. Like, I wanted it.
Yeah, so did I.
John Schlesinger directed it, who did Midnight Cowboy.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Everybody's talking at me.
I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs.
I love that film. That's a brilliant film.
But there's a bit where, yeah, Laurie Metcalf plays their lawyer. And I love her. I was really happy to see
Jackie.
Her. But yeah, yeah. But they kind of give her fuck all to do, really. Like,
he's taken possession. So whether he signed a lease or whether he paid you money or not, he's legally your tenant now. And he's protected by laws that say you have to go to court and prove that he deserves to be evicted. However, the net effect of these laws is to protect any pointy-headed cretin who moves into your property and slowly drives you bankrupt and insane.
I feel like she in general was not, outside of being in Roseanne, she wasn't given an awful lot of really good stuff to do until she did like Lady Bird or something. Like, you know, I think she was...
I didn't see Lady Bird. Is it good?
I liked it. Yeah, I thought it was really good. Yeah. I don't know if I'd swap it. I don't know if I feel that strongly about it, but I did really like it when I watched it, you know.
Do you think it's maybe a woman's film? Is that a wrong thing to say? Like,
I was kind of thinking about this earlier. I was thinking, like, looking at all our swaps so far, they're all pretty male heavy and pretty white male heavy as well. And I was thinking, but I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just suggesting things I like, and I'm sure you're doing the same. And it's like, but it's just sort of heading that way. Like, you know, and it's just, I don't think it, like, it's not a, I don't think you'd really say it's a woman's film. I mean, it is just a story, you know.
Everything's just a story. I didn't see Lady Bird, but I did watch Booksmart.
Oh, I like Booksmart. Is that the one with, what's her face in it? That was in the Caitlin Moran thing. She's Jonah Hill's sister, isn't she? Am I thinking of the right film?
Oh my God, is that Jonah Hill's sister? She looks like him.
Booksmart is the one where there's the two sort of nerdy girls decide to, the last night of high school, they're going to go to the party, the big party that everybody's having.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's Jonah Hill's sister. She's in the film version of Caitlin. I want to say Moran, but it's probably, as an Irish person, I feel like I should say Morin, but she says Moran, so that's her name. You know, the How to Build a Girl, you know that thing?
No, I would check it out. Booksmart was great. But Booksmart was great, but I also kind of thought, is it for me, really?
Well, I mean, I think this is, we kind of need to get over that, you know, because why, it's a story, it's a window into someone's, you know, experience, you know, to say it's not for me, then what is for you? Stories about blokes who look a bit like you, like, I mean, and I'm not directing this at you, I'm just saying in general, like, you know.
I wouldn't have said that, yeah, but here's the thing, Dan, it was great, and I will watch more with those people in it, because it was a really great film, I really liked it, I really enjoyed it, I thought it was very funny, but... I think it was maybe made like Alien. It never occurred to me that I was being lectured to in the Alien films. But you have a female protagonist. The second one is clearly about motherhood and is about relationships, girls' relationships with their mothers. And it's fantastic. But I don't think anybody was saying, well, this isn't for you. This isn't your lived experience, sir. Whereas I get the feeling with some of these films, people are saying, well, this isn't for you, actually. Go away, please.
But
sir,
if you don't want you here. If you were part of a group of people who've been told that for decades, this isn't for you, this is for the lads or whatever, then they have that right, you know. But if you enjoyed it, then it's for you, you know.
It's just the kind of lecturing sense that I have a problem with.
Well, I suppose, sorry to interrupt you, but I think...
No, go on.
If it's going to be aimed at a teen audience, I think it can't really be shrouded in metaphor like with the Alien films that you're talking about. Like, it has to, if it's going to be for a teen audience, it generally speaking has to be about them, whether it's in a real school or whether they're fucking wizards or whatever. Like, you know, it has to be somewhat recognizable as their lives. It can't be in space and an older character or whatever. Like, it, do you know what I mean?
Really?
Well, no, I'm not saying it can't be, but if you're making something that you want to speak directly to teenagers about their school experience, it's probably a good idea to have it about teenagers in a school, you know?
About their school experience. No, that's 100% right. I don't even know why I'm talking about this.
No, but it's fair enough though, because I find it with music, because I listen to a lot of music podcasts where they'll review. Like the Taylor Swift put out two albums over lockdown, And
yes,
I'll listen to 5 seconds of Taylor Swift and just think, this fucking feels wrong. I don't know. This doesn't, it doesn't feel like anything that I, it feels like I'm listening in on a conversation that's meant for somebody else. Like, you know, it's, mm-hmm. and it's the same thing. It's exactly what you're talking about. Like, and I don't know why I can't, I know a lot of men my age who would listen to a Taylor Swift album and get enjoyment out of it. But when I listen to it, yeah. I think, oh, this fucking, this doesn't feel right. Like this, I don't, I feel like I'm eavesdropping on something that is nothing to do with me. Like, you know, and it's, I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're describing, you know.
That's a good way of putting it. I, feeling like I'm eavesdropping rather than being invited to observe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But I didn't really feel that with Booksmart, though. I enjoy, like, maybe I just, with films, I don't feel it as strongly, you know.
I loved Booksmart. I thought it was great. I thought it was great. It's, you know what, I think it was just the we started talking about the comics thing, and I think I've got, that's kind of sort of floating over my head now. Did you hear the New Warriors? Marvel were going to relaunch the New Warriors last year. Do you know the New Warriors or anything?
I've There's heard no the reason name, should. But I don't know the characters.
It was a comic from the. It was a comic from.
I'm
the
sure 90s. It was just being relaunched so they could knock another film out of it, like a Guardians of the Galaxy knockoff.
They'll try something, but that created such a backlash. That was all over the internet last year. And the reason is the main characters were overweight and non-binary. And there was one called Safe Space, whose power was to protect everybody around him. And there was a girl who was, you know, a heavier girl who had a, I don't know whether it was magical or technological. It never came out, so we never got the question answered. Backpack that you could reach into and pull out the perfect thing for any situation, like Mary Poppins. And people went fucking nuts. People went fucking nuts about this pro and anti. They thought it was, people said it was the stupidest thing they ever heard of. And they were being preached to and being preached to and being talked down to. And other people said they were just bigots and they have to learn to accept non-binary people and so on. And my only response to that, as someone who quite likes the idea of a superhero whose power is to have a magic bag from which they can pull the perfect object for any situation, I like that superhero silliness. That doesn't bother me. And there was another guy in it who, this is the best one, there was another guy in it who inhaled a gas that contained the entire internet and so now knew everything he needed to know. I was just like, oh, I would read that in a fucking heartbeat. But they went fucking hell for leather against it. The fucking, it got really nasty. He got really sort of...
Did it stop the relaunch?
It stopped it. They didn't launch it in the end.
I don't but know. Why do people react to the idea of something? It's just like, let the thing exist and then read it and, you know, and decide whether you like it or not. Like, why...
There's always going to be that element in comics, people who get embarrassed by the silliness. And really, you know, they'll turn 23 or 24 and learn that actually it's all kind of, you know what, Batman isn't realistic. He's silly too. And they'll just learn to embrace the silliness and get over it. And that'll be grand. But also, they were not wrong that they were being preached to. You know what I mean? It's not like a character organically was introduced as a non-binary character. There was a bunch, there was a box ticking exercise that was designed to, you know, to fill certain quota, fill certain quotas of influence. And you don't influence people like that. They were right that they were being preached. They were 100% wrong in their reaction, but they weren't wrong that they were being preached to. They definitely were.
The way I think about that is, To write the ship, to steady the ship and to fucking tell stories that include everybody, for a little while it's going to feel like preaching, because the only way to, because everything is so entrenched in male and white and etc., the only way to change that is to start shoehorning things in there. Because you're dealing with, like, and we're not out of it yet. Like I know that...
No, we are not.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I still can't listen to Taylor Swift without feeling uncomfortable. I'm obviously still in the old days, like, you know. So yeah. I do think the only way to change things is to start being like, okay, it's the Ghostbusters, but with just women, like, or whatever. Like, you know, and I know even that was a few years
grand.
Ago.
Like, yeah. That was a grand film. That was funny. I laughed out loud several times watching it.
And look, I don't think the fucking first one is the sacred text that everybody seems to think it is. Like, you know, it's just a fucking, it's an SNL film with, and it's fucking hasn't aged that well and all around, you know, it's just,
no, it has not.
And it's, but it's grand. Like, you know,
yeah, it is grand. But I'll tell you something else. It has this thing. It has this thing in common with Pacific Heights. It is a real fucking Reagan era film. It is a real Reagan era film.
The Ghostbusters is like, I know the Pacific Heights, but in what sense that?
Oh, they're like the small. The government's walking all over the small businessman. Our heroes are just trying to get their small business off the ground with a small business loan. And in comes the Environmental Protection Agency telling them they can't have their machine. You can't use that machine. And so the Environmental Agency, the Environmental Agency said that these four fucking wasters aren't allowed to use, to build a nuclear equipment in the middle of Manhattan, one of the most densely populated islands on the planet. And because the Environmental Protection Agency says you four fucking losers, objective fucking losers, are not allowed to just waltz around Manhattan with nuclear material, the whole world starts to end. Please, fucking please. It's a Reagan-era wet dream. And Pacific Heights is the exact same thing. Because when they find that this man has locked himself in their downstairs room, their downstairs bedroom, they go to court and the court says, no, they go to a cop. And by the way, the San Francisco beat cop, he's seen everything. I'm going to sound like Norm MacDonald now. He's seen everything, right? He's got seen it. This cop
hotter than has a been called. Pistol.
This cop that has been called to see people behave in the worst way human people's be, you have intimate partner violence, this man gets called to. This cop is so fucking disgusted that this man would turn off the heat on Michael Keaton, who has locked himself in their death. This man thinks Matthew Modine is the sickest fucking cunt he ever did fucking see. He cannot take it. That cop is disgusted by the situation. And then they go to the court and the judge is disgusted. You mean to say you want to throw this poor psychopath out on the street and fucking leave him in ruins with his fucking $7,500 that he carries around in readies in his pocket. Oh, it was just a film. Instead of Pacific Heights, I'm pretty sure the working title for this film was, you know, white property owners really are the oppressed class. That's what this film, that's what the working title was. I have nothing to back that up. I haven't read that on the internet. I just know in my heart that that film's working title was white property owners are the real oppressed class in this country, beset on every side by psychopath heirs to steal fortunes or whatever the fuck he was, and minority scam artists. It's not a racial thing. They just happen to be in minorities.
That second thing is literally dialogue from the film.
He's probably one of these minority scam artists. What are you saying? It's not a racial thing. You fucking just said it was a racial thing. You fucking just said it was a racial thing.
It was,
dude,
a load of cobblers. It really was.
Listen, I just want the guy the hell out of my house.
Well, then you better listen to me or he's going to be so far up your butt you're going to be picking him out your nose. Now, I want you to turn back on all the heat and all the power to this man's apartment. You apologize, and you do not, and I emphasize, do not harass him again. Then go out and get yourself a lawyer. Because according to California Civil Code, Mr. Hayes can sue you for this stunt you just pulled. And most likely he'll win.
He doesn't even have a right to be in the apartment.
Are you listening to me? Are you listening to me? If he's in, he's got rights. That's how it works. And I'll tell you something else, friend. If he decides to fight an eviction, you're already knee-deep in shit. Get a lawyer.
Tell you what, though. The bits where Melanie Griffith was going off detectoring kind of reminded me of Working Girl a little bit. So
I've never seen Working Girl.
Have you never seen Working Girl?
No, I've never seen it.
It's a good film. I've seen that not recently, but recently enough that I'm convinced, like maybe in my very late 20s or early 30s I saw it, so I'm pretty sure it's a pretty good film.
I got it mixed up. I had it in the same space in my head as 9 to 5, but it's probably not the same kind of film at all. Like, mm-hmm. Is it?
No, it's not really. But it's got that great song. What's her name? Chrissy
Hynde, is it?
No, not Chrissy Hynde. No, what's her name?
Chrissy Moore. Let
the rivers run. Let all the dirt.
I have no idea.
The heaven above me, the sky who loved me. Spy who loved me.
Carly Simon.
Carly Simon. Fuck, what a dickhead I am.
Chrissy. Chrissy, fucking what's her face?
Chrissy Simon. From the pretending to James.
I am so vain, I'm probably a bitch. You know that one? Like,
I'm so vain is an interesting song. Did we talk about this recently?
I don't think so, no.
Because I was talking to Neve. Okay, a lot of times I can't remember whether I was talking to you or talking to Neve because the same shite comes out of both of your mouths. But I was talking to her that there's a lot of spec.
I'm going to ask you to put a pin in that for 1 second because I just
That's all right.
Before, I'm going to forget this if I don't tell you. You just mentioned Dolly Parton. We had guys working on the house, the septic tank recently, right? They were out there working. They had to come into the house to get something and the guy came into the kitchen. I was wearing an apron, kneading flour, listening to an audiobook about Dolly Parton.
What do you think his reaction was? When will this chap stop living a lie?
His workman comes in. It's like, Darren, I just wanted to know about the fur. You know, like, oh, yeah, I'm a man and I think it's over there.
I just happen to be a man who loves Dolly.
But I want to hear what you were going to come out with, though. I thought it was a funny image and I just wanted to shoehorn it in there.
It is a funny image and thank you for shoehorning it in. I was talking to her about You're So Vain because there's a lot of speculation about who You're So Vain is about. In the intervening years from my research, it seems like it's most likely about James Taylor.
Oh, because, really?
Well, it's because Carly Simon can't be asked a question about any topic, in any subject, in any place on the world without bringing how much of a shitbag James Taylor is into the answer. Well, make some allowances for exaggeration for the sake of the story, but yeah, that's only exaggeration. That's not complete fucking make-up.
He seems like such a nice bloke, James Taylor. I know he had his issues with drugs and whatnot, but...
Well, this is the thing. I was talking to Neve about it, and I was like, apparently some people think it's about James Taylor, and some people think it's about Mick Jagger. Warren Beatty is another fucking contender. But the time we were fucking talking about it was James Taylor and Mick Jagger we were debating. What Neve observed was that if you think it's about James Taylor, you walk away from that song thinking, God, what a dickhead. James Taylor, I thought better of James Taylor. Jesus Christ. If in your head you substitute James Taylor with Mick Jagger for James Taylor, you walk away from that song going, classic Mick.
It's true.
How do you? I know.
I'll tell you what, Mick Jagger sings on that song.
Yeah, that's true.
He sings the background vocals. But it would be be a very Jagger thing to sing away on that and just think, this isn't about me. I can sing away on it. Like,
you're a fucking cunt because I said that to Neve. I said, yeah, well, Mick Jagger sings and it's probably not him. And she literally said exactly what you just said to me right now. She went, it'd be totally like the guy in that song to sing on that song, even though it's about him. I was like, okay, fair point. But I just thought it was interesting. The exact same circumstances, the exact same story. If it's about James Taylor, Mick, you go, wow, James Taylor has been secretly a dickhead this entire time. If it's about Mick Jagger, it's like, oh, dear old, good old Mick.
Classic Mick.
Give him hell, Mick.
Do you think Mick Jagger is someone who's only done damage to his legacy since about 1982 or so?
No, not even slightly.
I don't know. I don't know what the Stones... I don't know who the Stones are for now. Do you know what I mean?
I went to see the Stones about... way more than 10 years ago. I was going to say 10 years ago. Way more than 10 years ago now. But I went to see them, and people were telling me, why would you go to see the Rolling Stones? They're just the biggest Rolling Stones tribute act on the planet.
And I was like, oh, okay. But I went anyway. And what I discovered when I was there in Slane was, it may be true that the Rolling Stones is the biggest Rolling Stones tribute act on the planet. But what is also true is that the Rolling Stones are the biggest Rolling Stones tribute act on the fucking planet. And that's a fucking amazing thing. I remember Joey Diaz being on Joe Rogan.
Oh, I really don't like that guy.
Okay, fair enough. All right. I do.
Come on, what can I tell you?
I fucking like...
I feel like having a shower after hearing him, like, you know...
You should do. That's the kind of... I enjoy older gentlemen with too much to say because that's my fucking trajectory and that's where I'm heading and I need to know that there are people in the world who enjoy those people. But he was talking... He was doing security for a while in Denver and the Rolling Stones came around and they had the whole thing set up, but there was a big space in front of the stage and Mick came, the Stones were coming during the tour and Mick was like, why is that? Why is all this space empty? And they said, well, fire safety requirements means we can't, there's a maximum limit to how many people we can have. And Mick Jagger turned around and said, you listen to me, cocksucker. If you want the Rolling Stones playing here on Thursday night, that place is going to be fucking full. Sell those fucking tickets, cocksucker. Listen, Danny, I can only hold Joey it Diaz. So much. I like him. What can I tell you? I like him. I enjoy his stories.
Such a creep, though.
All his stories are really, really funny.
Yeah, if they're not happening to you. I've heard him tell some really horrific fucking stories about how he would decide which female comedians did and didn't get time on his gigs and all this, and it's like, no, this is no good. You are, you know, no.
He makes me laugh. Dan. He makes me laugh.
It's because, yeah, but that's because he's got a delivery and a tone and a rhythm that's funny. You can't take that away from him, like, but the shit that he's actually saying is fucking horrific, like, you know. If he, at the start of it, he said Exhibit A, you would be horrified.
Yeah, well, listen, all right, but the period of the Rolling Stones that you like is a Me Too fucking minefield, let me tell you that.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
I accept there was plenty of wrongdoing. I accept that. I'm not telling you they're not. All I'm saying is...
I know what you're only joking.
All I'm saying...
You're right, because the Beatles are the same. Like, John Lennon was a fucking scumbag, like, you know?
The moment that something goes down on the record and everybody goes, oh my gosh, it's like... You can't, I don't grant you the fucking, oh my God moment. You knew, you had to know, but you put it aside because you liked something else. You liked the films or you liked the music. Are you?
Everyone is to blame for that to a certain extent. Like everyone's got something that like that, you know.
Well, that's all I'm saying. We're all complicit and some of us are more complicit than others, but nobody works above their culture. Nobody operates above their culture. That's all I'm saying. It's a very rare person that does.
Well, this is why I think that I can't fucking, you know, like to go back to it again, listen to Taylor Swift without feeling weird. Like, you know, it's just like, it just feels, I don't know, I'm just like, well, that's, it's an awful thing to say, but it's like, that's like girls' music. It's so stupid.
But would you feel that way about Joni Mitchell? Do you feel that way about Your Sylvain? Like Carly Simon or...
Maybe it's just the way she's... Maybe it's because I was around when she was younger and she was like a little pop star with a guitar, like, you know, or whatever. Like,
yeah.
See, Joni Mitchell seems like an artist to me. That's another shit thing to say, like, you know.
No, because I never thought of that. Yeah, Joni Mitchell was always a grown woman to me. There was a period where Taylor Swift was a child to me. That's a weird... I never thought of that.
And those people that start off in folk... Like Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, all these kind of people.
Yeah.
At no point are they ever singing like a 20-year-old. It's not like they were in Green Day and they were like, do you know what I mean? Like music doesn't lend itself to like, we're all going to get fucked tonight or whatever.
I never thought of that. That's very interesting. Yes.
Taylor Swift's an amazing songwriter and she, but all like her songs are like, he was so cute, no, 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 or her early ones are anyway. Like, and I, what is there there for me? Like, you know, even at that age, like, she does develop and she does get into things where you could sort of listen to it, but still, I still just can't get on board with it at all. Like, the same, but I can listen to Laura Marling. She seems like an artist to me, like, you know.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I should not fucking open my mouth about this. I should not open my mouth about this before I have considered it, but here I am and I'm going to. Sometimes some people feel like they want you to listen to your stuff, their stuff, and some people feel it's not for you, actually. Go away. I don't know how many times I've misinterpreted that. Maybe there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, listen to my stuff, and I'm interpreting it as go away. But there are definitely go-away people, though.
There's a lot of music podcasts I listen to where music journalists my age, male music journalists my age, will talk very seriously about, like, you know, like Olivia, is it Olivia Rodrigo, who had an album out recently, and Taylor Swift, and these kind of pop stars, and will seriously discuss the merits of it and this kind of stuff, and talk about it in terms of songwriting and blah, blah, blah. But based on some of this stuff I was listening to, some of these podcasts, I try to be a little bit more open to modern pop music. Like, and, you know, it's stuff that's been sung by some of these people who are teenagers, like, you know.
Yeah.
But if I like it, then I'm like, well, I like it, so is it okay or whatever? But then I sort of, I try to imagine being somewhere, like at a party or something, and that person is there, and someone says, you know, there's someone in the room who's a really big fan of yours, and they go, oh, really? Who? That guy. And then they see me and they're like, what, really? Do you know what I mean? Like, they would think, what is he getting out of this? Like, you know.
Dan, there's a fair to medium chance that if you were at a party with one of those people, by the following morning, you would be on a register somewhere.
Well, no, I don't mean it like that. I just mean, like, if someone like me was pointed out to, I think her name is Olivia Rodrigo, as here's someone who really likes your stuff. They wouldn't think, oh, great, I'm really happy that my music reaches a base this big. They would think, no, he's listening to it for all the wrong reasons. I don't want to be in the same room as that dude. Like, you know, like, that's the reaction I would get. Like,
no,
you know,
breathy panting on the next album. Everybody listened to Alanis Morissette, didn't they? Back in the day?
She was a child star and stuff. Like, she was making records since she was about 12. Like, she was...
Really?
Yeah, no, she wasn't some grungy woman who... Like, I'm basing this on memories of reading things. No recent research. I haven't thought about Alanis Morissette in quite a long time. However, she...
That's something for you to do this week, then.
Yeah. But she was kind of marketed as this woman who had an awful breakup, and all of a sudden she was angry and flannel, and we're going to make this angry record. But she was making records all along. She was like a teen pop star in Canada.
And then Jagged Little Pill just happened to be the one that popped.
It was the first time most people this side of the world or in the US or whatever heard her. Mm-hmm. So as far as we were concerned, she was like, well, there's not much difference between her and Courtney Love or whoever, like, you know.
Yeah.
But there was a massive... Well, no, Courtney Love was also kind of trying to be famous, like she was in films and stuff, but...
Yeah, well, it certainly stood to her, fair play to her, Courtney Love.
Like, in the early days of Hole, she was a bit closer to the source than Alanis Morissette was, you know. Or at least that's my fucking snotty reading of it, like, you know.
I am in a science fiction group on Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook in a long time, and over the last week and a half, I've started posting on this science fiction group because I joined it ages ago, and a notification came up about it, and I thought, oh, science fiction, that's right, I'll take a look. So I started posting on it, and it's flavor of the month, and it'll disappear shortly. But the other night, somebody brought up Captain Marvel, the film Captain Marvel, about how they didn't like it, or they liked it and they thought it was unfairly, and I didn't like it, really. I was about to fucking post something. I was about to sort of put a straightforward position about why I didn't like the film onto Facebook. And then in the end, I just thought, why am I doing this? This is a stupid thing to do. Because at the end of the day, what's going to be the dividing line in this conversation is, did you like Captain Marvel or did you not like Captain Marvel? And if I say I didn't like Captain Marvel, I'm going to be on the same side as a bunch of people who I don't really, you know, just...
Yeah, who don't like it for different reasons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or here's the thing, Dan. I don't even think they dislike it for different reasons. If they said, well, look, it's kind of insincere and a box-ticking exercise and quite preachy and quite a political idea of womanhood. Now, I don't know what fucking womanhood's like. You needn't fucking ask me about womanhood. But I didn't feel closer to any understanding or any kind of genuine empathic connection to any of the characters at the end of it as I did before. So in that respect, it's a failure to me. It just wasn't. But I'm,
yeah.
If they said that, I would be like, yeah, that's right. And I think that's where a lot of those guys are motivated from. But they think, well, I feel that way, so I suppose I should send Brie Larson a rape threat. And there's a leap there that I can't. I'm like, wait, what? What did you say, dude? I don't want to be on the same side as the fence as those guys. You know, yeah. I just. However, I feel like Jagged Little Pill, which I can barely fucking remember and haven't thought about in like 15 years at least.
Oh, but if you press play on it, though, it would all come back. There are those, like...
I feel like that was... I was being invited into some kind of an experience rather than being lectured to about an experience. And if people get sort of irritated by being lectured to, I can't really blame them.
Is it a lecture, though? Or is it just... I don't think anybody's been preached to, though. I don't think...
Really, Dan?
Look, I think all of those... Any big film you go and see, no matter what it is, like, from, like, fucking Black Panther to Toy Story to whatever the fuck it is you're going to see in the cinema that's a big budget production, it's been put together based on crass commercial concerns. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, so, at the minute, the crass commercial concern is women... We need things with women that women will see. I don't know, like, that doesn't seem to me any more preachy than anything else that I'll go in, that's been made, to be honest. Like, you know, it's just, it's preachy because it's been done as a reaction to something. It's something that should be happening, but it's not happening in quite the right way. But then again, what is, like, you know, none of that other shit is happening in the right way either. It's like, well, people in capes, that's what people seem to want, like, you know. Although I wonder, is that a little bit on the wane? Because all the new superhero stuff that's coming out seems to be deconstructing it a little bit. Like, I didn't watch it, but, like, WandaVision, and isn't there one with Loki?
WandaVision's great. Yeah. Loki is turning out to be pretty good as well. Yeah, I really like it so far.
But isn't it, it's not quite, like... an Avengers film, like, is it a little bit more low-key?
Okay, how many days have you been storing that one up for?
I said that by accident. I wouldn't have actually, but
it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I have to say WandaVision, but it'll have to do very, very well to be better than WandaVision than me. Elizabeth Olsen was absolutely magnificent in that show. It was such a good TV show. I would put WandaVision up, and I tried to fucking contain my enthusiasm for WandaVision this past however many months it's been, over 3 months. But it's 3 months now, and I keep thinking, looking back and going, my God, that was good. My God, that was good. What a great fucking TV show.
But is it the thing where a lot of these, I don't know what the last actual superhero film that came out in the Marvel Universe was, but a lot of these TV shows seem to be taking it apart a little bit more, and it's not just another big adventure with everybody in it. It seems to be a bit more...
I will say, there's a very, very clever conceit. Listen, spoilers for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This is exactly the kind of thing I was talking about. Falcon and at the end of Endgame, Captain America has to time travel and comes back a very old man and has to retire. So he hands Falcon, a black guy, his shield, says, you be the new Captain America. And everybody was like, oh, Falcon's going to be the new Captain America. It'll be a black Captain America. What a fucking interesting thing. And you could just tell that they were waiting for the backlash of a black Captain America. So when Falcon and the Winter Soldier starts, spoilers, Falcon has decided I don't want this shit. I it's too much pressure. It's too much handle. I really think, feel like standing up and being American, am I betraying something because I'm African American? I don't want anything to do with this. And he hands the shield over to the government. And the government give the shield to the most sleazy, psychopathic, the Michael Keaton of superheroes. Not Batman. Actually, Michael Keaton was a pretty good superhero. But
yeah, I'm going to be Captain America, see?
And he does horrible things with it until the entire fucking viewing population of the world were screaming at the screen, Sam, take the shield off that fucking lunatic and be Captain America instead. I thought it was an incredibly clever way of sidestepping that bullshit. I think it's a bit depressing that they have to sidestep that bullshit, but I thought it was an incredibly clever. By the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier, nobody was upset that there would be a black Captain America, because the alternative was a white one who was a fucking lunatic.
Is Winter Soldier the one that I was supposed... Remember we did the swap one time, I was supposed to watch Winter Soldier. I watched the wrong one. I watched something else.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
It was a Captain America film, but it was the wrong Captain America film.
Yeah. Look, listen, all I can tell you is WandaVision, really good. Watch WandaVision, it's brilliant. But I didn't feel lectured to about WandaVision. I felt like, please come in. But of course, it's fucking Disney. Disney would take the fucking fillings out of your teeth. So, of course, they would welcome you in. So
I'm really concerned that the Peter Jackson Beatles documentary that's been made is actually coming out on Disney Plus. It's not going to the cinemas. So, I have my sister's Disney Plus password, so it's all good. But I was thinking, it's such a weird part of the Beatles story, and there was a lot of really sort of backstabbing and dark stuff going on. And I just wonder, how much of that are they actually going to be able to go into when at the start of it, it says Disney? Like, it's just...
Oh, no, here,
it's
I wouldn't...
so weird, like, you know...
I wouldn't worry about that. Disney did a load of shit. Disney did The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. A film that I will not go back to for quite a long period of time because I remember it fondly, and I would still be remembering Pacific Heights fondly if I hadn't watched it yesterday. So maybe The Hand That Rocks the Cradle is shite, but I remember it being gripping and cool.
Rebecca De Mornay was with Leonard Cohen for a while in the 90s, like when he was like in his 60s and she was in her, I don't know, 30s. Like
that doesn't surprise me. Do I need to say Rebecca De Mornay could have done better? Do I need to say that out loud? Like
what? What do you mean? Could have done better than short, odd-looking Leonard Cohen.
I love Leonard Cohen.
So do I.
But come on, man. Come on. Jesus Christ. Have some self-respect, Leonard. Do you know how many 60-year-old women there are? Be with one of them.
Well, I think he was, but he was 80.
I hope one of Rebecca's friends sat her down and said, Rebecca, how are you getting on? Leonard, how are you skin? How are you getting on? And she would have said, it's wonderful. And they would have said, yeah, I'm sure, yeah. But at the same time, just like that. Just like that.
You would hope that she would have friends that concerned about her that would do that.
Yeah. Anyway, look. Pacific Heights, huh, Dan? What do you make of it?
I didn't like it at all. I thought there was... Like, I kind of, you know, I got a bit of a nostalgia buzz just out of how the whole thing looked. Like, it looked very 90s, like, you know, and like, as
it did. It looked more 90s than 80s, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, for sure. It was.
Yeah.
And he was, like, he was, like, falling asleep on the couch at one point watching MTV. And it was, like, I can't remember what it was on, but it seemed to be a load of lads in flannel. Like, you know, when it was, you know, it was like, oh,
Jesus and Mary Chain or something.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, that's nice. There's music on MTV, how quaint.
This brings another thing up for me. I'm sorry. I'm glad just before we stopped, you brought that up. Because Michael Keaton, spoilers, sneaks into the house at that very moment and beats him with a fucking 9-iron. With a fucking, or whatever that golf club is. A big, heavy-looking golf club. And then 2 minutes later, he's up and around and about the house and crawling in crawl spaces. It's like, what was that scene for then?
For what you know about Michael Keaton, I just assumed he was going to kill him at that point, to be honest. Like, you know, just given the way that movies were tested and all back then, it's probably a reshoot. Maybe he did get killed in it, like, you know.
They didn't do the one reshoot that would have helped and just not have him in the film at all. Like,
But like, but when you're younger and you're just watching something that's a bit grown up, you're like, oh, that's class. Yeah. Scary man hits him with a club. It's brilliant. You know,
oh,
like,
I don't have to go to bed. That's for me sister.
Like, one of the main memories I have of watching the Michael Keaton Batman film is like, this is so grown up. Look at the two lads at the start. Like, they're real criminals. Like, they're not just like cartoons. Like, they're real lads that just rob someone, and now Batman's going to show them that you shouldn't fucking do that. Like, it just seemed really grown up to me. Like, you know, and it still kind of seems more grown up than the Nolan ones, really. Like, you know, but...
I like the Nolan ones.
The thing that... And we're going on a bit now, but the thing that I like about that first Batman film is that Batman shows up on a fucking roof and he's Batman and we're in business. It's not like... Batman Begins, he used to go and fucking train and all this kind of stuff. It's like, and Liam Neeson, and what am I watching? This is so boring. Like, and nothing against Liam Neeson, but just in that film, it was just like, fucking hell. Like, how much of this is there until he's Batman?
He's a strange guy.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, does he not think he's gone like in a weird direction late in life?
Well, didn't he say that he was... Was it Liam Neeson that said that he used to... think he was going to get beaten up by black people in LA when he was walking around or whatever. Was that Liam Neeson or was that Gabriel Byrne?
No, that was Liam Neeson, and he said he went out looking for a black person to beat the shit out of.
Wow.
A friend of his had been raped, and the only description she gave was a black guy, and so he went and lost the run of himself. I think people made a bit... I don't know if they made a bit much of it. It was a weird thing to say. It was certainly something he shouldn't have done, but he did tell it as a story in the context of, when I was a young flat, I did something really stupid and it actually could have been really worse. So I was like, well, okay, I agree with you. That was really stupid and it could have been really worse.
I do think we're going to live to see a time where we can comfortably talk about things a little bit more without having to self-correct so much, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
But
we're doing our bit here on the Swap Meet podcast, Dan.
That's true.
So if I haven't gotten us cancelled this week.
No.
Anyway, go on.
Well, all I was going to say is that I think that's about all we can say about Pacific Heights, really.
Yeah, a yuppie film about yuppies who are the real victims.
I'm struggling with what to pick for next week because I had something in my head, but now, just with what we've been talking about, it's made me sort of think of something else. I was thinking because I really like it, and for no other reason, the Jerry Seinfeld's special on Netflix. I think it's called 23 Hours to Kill.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's I didn't think I was gonna like it, but I watched it when
it came
out.
Hated him.
Yeah, I've done a real turnaround over the last few months. Like, Jerry Seinfeld's kind of become my fatherhood idol. Dan, it's weird.
Dan, you've been doing 360s. You used to love that man, and I used to be very cool on him. And then I watched him one time and thought, oh, that guy's cool. And I came back to you and I went, do you know Jerry Seinfeld? You're right, he's cool. And you went, nah.
Well, I think maybe then, look, I know it's another fucking white dude or whatever, but I think that's what I'm going to go with because the other...
Fuck off. We are two white dudes, right? There are plenty of... I watched that documentary about Sam Cooke on Netflix. It was great.
Oh, is there a documentary about Sam Cooke on Netflix?
Yeah, the two killings of Sam Cooke.
I watched the one about... I didn't know Miles Davis went to Juilliard. Miles Davis, I always thought of Miles Davis as like a real, like, up from the streets or whatever, like, but...
Yeah.
His dad was a millionaire. Miles Davis went to Juilliard. He was a very well-off child. Yeah.
Holy shit, I didn't know that. Where did you learn that? Is there a Miles Davis documentary?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's not Miles Ahead, which is the thing with Don Cheadle playing Miles Davis in it, and it's kind of like a caper, which is actually good as well.
John Cheadle lost a lot of weight to play that, and Don Cheadle then realized, oh, I'm too old to put this back on easy. Oh, you can see him in the Avengers film. He left one Avengers film looking really normal, and he came back looking like a fucking smack addict, and he remained looking that way for ages. They're like, Don, put the bit of weight on, for Jesus' sake.
But the Miles Davis film he's in is kind of like a caper with him and Ewan McGregor running around looking for tapes or something. I can't remember. It's like Give My Regards to Broad Street, but better. Like, you know, he's really good as Miles Davis. The film is tip-top stupidity, but it's very watchable, you know.
Good stupidity? Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's good. And he's great as Miles Davis. I don't know if it was worth knackering his fucking physical health over, but I mean,
I'm worried about that man. He fucked himself over to play that.
Jesus,
fair play to him. Like, that's commitment, but also I think it's a little bit sort of a, hey, I've done this body changing before. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, was it 20 years
not
ago?
Not at 50, Don. Not at 50, you didn't, sir. Anyway.
But yeah, like, so yeah, in a weird way, Jerry Seinfeld has kind of become my fathering idol, just the way he talks about and stuff. So, I don't know, just some of the things he says just make sense. And it's not even just this special, even just stuff he says on, we watch Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, like, during lockdown, for the first lockdown, I think we watched it every day, and we were we would just go back to the start and watch them again, like, you know, because it was people driving around, hanging out in cafes, like, you know, it was like fantasy, but it was
cool.
But and I just kind of, I've sort of become less of a Larry David person and more of a Jerry Seinfeld person over the last like year. It's so strange. Well, the thing is, look, I find Larry David hilarious, and when I started writing stand up, he was like the model. I just thought, I like what he does. I want to do something like that. But the thing is,
funny.
You can't live like that because everything's a problem. No matter what you're doing in your day, there's so much to consider. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas Jerry Seinfeld is listening to Arnie Adams complaining about having to do the show he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jerry going, you got somewhere better to be?
It's such a great answer to a stupid fucking question. Like, you know.
Yes.
But
anyway, so do you want us to do Jerry Seinfeld? What was the other thing you were thinking of?
Well, after we were talking about Catelyn Moran, I was thinking her sitcom Raised by Wolves, which is on All Four. So we could do one or other of those things.
Whichever you like.
Let's do Jerry Seinfeld, because look, I get it. It is another white dude, but it speaks to me at the minute. So, you know. We have to make these, but this is how you change things, Niall. You're in your pattern and you see, well, that's a pattern that's been put there from fucking decades of bullshit.
I don't think that's true, Dan.
See, that's what I think.
I think what you do is you find something that genuinely inspires and you follow that. And if that is a woman, that's fantastic. Plenty of women I like. Like I say, Joni Mitchell is amazeballs. I got nothing against Joni Mitchell. I love Carly Simon. There's nothing that doesn't feel hectoring or lecturing to me. It's brilliant. It's just there are comments on the human condition. So comments on the human condition. Why did I start talking about this shit this week? Why am I going on about this? It's because I drank wine.
Well, at least you're not asleep.
I don't know what fucking story is. I don't know why I got onto all this.
So for the next fortnight, then we'll do Jerry Seinfeld. I believe it's called 23 Hours to Kill. What we'll do. And it's an hour as opposed to two series of a sitcom. I wouldn't have made you watch two series. That's ridiculous. You could have just watched two or three of them, like, you know, but whatever. We can do that another time.
Anywho.
But that's it from us for this week. Thanks very much for listening. I've been Danny O'Hanlon.
I've been Niall McCann, and I apologize profusely for that.
No need, man. I'm going to edit it all out. The episode's going to be about 25 minutes this week.
Cheerio, guys. Oh, dear, good luck. Thanks for listening.